Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Rangers, it's me, Jackie Cation. Welcome to the Dork Forest. I just want you to know the websites, JackieCation.com, DorkForest.com, all my tour dates, all my new merch, all my stand-up stuff, and all my specials are on JackieCation.com. DorkForest.com can be linked back to JackieCation.com. Thank you so much for listening to the show. It is November or December of 2023, and it is time to not donate to the Dork Forest. It is time to find a local food bank in your town and donate whatever you would donate to the Dork Forest to them. There you go. If you go to feedingamerica.org and put in your zip code, they will find food bank. If you also go to Google, put the name of your town and the words food bank, you will find the food bank. So I thank you so much for your support all year, every year. I'm happy to do the show. I love doing the show. I love my fans, which is, I believe, you guys. Anyway, and I love the people who help. The people who help, let's just talk about them. Mike Rickberg, Sarah Cohen. Mike wrote and sang with Sarah the intro song, and he sings the Mexican hat dance at the end of the show. And Patrick Brady does the audio and video editing for this show, and I appreciate that so much. And Dawn Cowell's actually doing the clips right now. And then Vilmos, still working on the website, though Promotional Rescue did the Jackie Cation reskin, which is kind of exciting. Anyway, I'm sure there's many other things that I should be talking about, but let's get into the show.
Hi. Guess what? We're recording, Dave Hill. We're recording. I'm in my garage, and it's exciting to be with Dave Hill. I wonder what painting of my father's do I want you to see behind me?
That's your father's painting? Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, that's the woods, and then the little guy is an Armenian sculptor who has done like a couple, and it's like a 30-foot tall sculpture.
Oh wow!
Yeah, it's a couple of heads. She's wearing either a scarf or she's got real long hair, and then
love it.
And then you see the clock. The clock is less exciting up high. I love that clock. It's my favorite clock. I asked him to paint it. Wow. It's all right. What am I? An art critic? And they were free. So why don't I calm down?
I love them.
They're all great. They're all of his paintings, except for that one unicorn that didn't work.
Sometimes,
are amazing.
Yeah. No, I love art from friends and relatives.
He's an outsider artist, I was told, by Maria Bamford's husband, who is a fine artist.
Yeah. He is. Is his name Jeff?
No, it's Scott.
So close, so close. I haven't had enough coffee yet. No, I've chatted with him a few
Scott
times.
Scott Marvel Cassidy, yeah.
That's right. Yes, of course. I'm such a monster.
Oh,
it's only because I haven't had enough coffee to get my mental Rolodex working.
Oh, I don't begrudge you.
I have chatted with him about art, and he's friends with another artist friend of mine, Drew Elliott, in Philadelphia, who's an amazing artist.
Rangers of the Dork Forest, I'm sitting here with literally a multifaceted diamond, Mr. Dave Hill. It's, by the way, it is act Mr. Dave Hill on the Instagram. So what
socials.
A great way.
Yeah.
All the socials. What a way to get into that.
Sure.
Dave Hill, I'm a huge fan, and I like you, which is also kind
of
exciting.
I like you too. Yeah.
Yeah. DaveHillOnline.com is your main website, and you have a new book. Usually I don't let people talk about the thing that they're promoting, except for that you're such an awesome weirdo that your book is about the thing that you're a dork about, which makes more sense than any other comedian or writer or musician that I've ever interviewed, because it's not about comedy or music so much. It's about freaking hockey.
Yeah.
And you're not a professional hockey player.
No, that's like, well, that's sort of partial inspiration for the book. But yeah, it was just like, I thought, what could I do to further alienate people?
Alienate? And, is it?
Well,
is there some anti-hockey?
Well, yeah, that's a bit of the book is, well, no, like, cause it would be like you, I guess I did it with my first two books. I wrote theoretically humorous essays, which is kind of what, you know, you expect from a comedian
writing
a book.
Right. David Sedaris did everyone a favor by becoming very successful, but not being a stand-up comic.
Yeah. And then everyone else is like, maybe I could be the next David Sedaris and I wouldn't have to do the other stuff anymore.
Right.
But then it never works out for any, has not worked out for anyone else.
Meryl Marco. What about Meryl Marco? She wasn't a stand-up either, though.
She's amazing, but I don't think she's, I mean, what do I know? But I don't think that she's, buying a house in Tuscany off her earnings. I could be wrong.
I'm calling her right now.
I mean,
how's the house in Italy coming along?
I love her, but I mean, like, if she's putting those Sedaris numbers up, who does?
You know what? I don't know if she's doing the Sedaris.
You need to edit
numbers.
This out because it sounds like I'm trash talking. I'm not. She's amazing. I'm a huge fan of hers.
No, we're all a huge fan. I'll tell you something. She did a Dork Forest. I was like, "What do you want to talk about?" And she's like, "I always have four dogs. Is that something?" And I was "Sure, that is something." And at one point during that episode, she said, "They tend to die in twos. You know, they age out." Like much like people, age out. That's how people die. By the way, they age out. That's how Jackie Cajun refers to people dying, aging out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm incredibly sensitive. Has anyone heard that about?
Excuse me.
No problem. But then when she only has two dogs, she said, "I feel like I don't have any dogs when I only have two dogs." And I was like, "But you have two dogs." And she's like, "Right, we got to quickly get two more dogs."
Yeah,
she always likes four dogs.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I think about this often because I only have one dog. And sometimes we talk about getting another one just to make things more fun, more dogs, more fun. But then also part of me thinks that, you have multiple dogs to soften the blow of losing one. And so I'm not saying that's what people do, but sometimes I think it may have that benefit. So
I think that a lot of people pause. Like, this is my first time I've ever had a dog. I've always wanted a dog. I'm 100 years old. We got a dog during lockdown. And then my mom-in-law moved in and she brought a dog and a cat into our tiny house.
And then do you guys still have a lizard?
No, he passed away.
I'm sorry.
Oh, that's fine. 23 years. There's his memorial.
Oh, that's his a photo and a plaque. That's
a photo
very
and
nice.
A plaque. He's buried underneath because we built this tiny room right during lockdown. And he was buried in the garden part right under here. So that's why the plaque and the picture's right there.
Well, I can tell you, I'm sure you are way ahead of me on this one. But having buried an iguana myself.
What?
Not my own. You got to bury those things deep. Otherwise, skunks and all the...
Everybody wants to eat a dead iguana for some reason.
Oh, forget it.
Andy had to dig quite deep. Andy is in charge of burying all animals, sadly, my fella.
Yeah, well, you got to go. You're going to bury an iguana. I know I didn't come here today to talk about burying reptiles. But if you're going to do it, if you God forbid, you have to, if you're saddled with the task, you got to... You got to wrap them in like a garbage bag and do as much as you can to throw rodents off the trail. Like, because
are the rodents the police in this story? You really have to
basically, skunks and like, I don't know, raccoons, whatever. But basically, I'm talking like you got to go at least 4 feet if you're going to bury an iguana in your yard.
Okay.
You
got to
put that on a t-shirt.
I'm looking forward to talking about this with Annie. It's going to be on your tombstone. I am looking forward to the bonus where I talk to Andy about this and talk and find out exactly how deep he buried Tiberius. Yes.
Well, how long has Tiberius been gone?
He's been gone. It's got to be 6 years now.
I think you're fine. My caution.
Oh, and there's
about
a slab of concrete over him now. But for those first two years when there was nothing.
Okay, yeah, those are the years you really want to make sure. I mean, I would say you get past that first 6 months and you haven't been
no digging
any problems. You're probably fine.
Yeah, yeah. There we go. Well, it's been great talking to you, Dave.
Yeah, this is my. I'm like the iguana coroner or something.
I do want to know about the name of the new book is called The Awesome Game, by the way, and it's DaveHillOnline.com. But here's the scoop. Here's what I want to know. What did you grow up in Canada? Why hockey?
No, people often think I'm Canadian, but sort of like the thing with my career. For the longest time, people always thought I was from England.
Oh.
And then they thought I was from Canada, but I'm from Cleveland.
Okay.
And
I see the mix. Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. But my grandfather was from Canada. So
okay,
I guess as Canadian of an upbringing as you could have in the Midwest of the United States, because the patriarch and his, my siblings and I, we were made, you know, we had to skate at like 3 years old, two and a half or whatever.
Wow.
Like you had to.
Right.
My oldest sister tried to opt out of it when she was around like 10 or something. And my grandfather, who a wonderful man, but, you know, wasn't a stranger to having a drink, which led to quite a bit of honesty. She said this in front of him and he said, "What good are you if you can't skate?" And it was like, I remember thinking like, well, he's right. Yeah, that's like a basic, like that's how it was growing up. Like it was considered like a basic skill.
Snowshoeing would be a more basic in just to, because then you could hump out of the wilderness if you were somehow trapped. Skating. Yeah. Here's the best thing about skating and girls. I was raised in Wisconsin. We were not encouraged to do anything physical ever.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. There was no, we all had to learn an instrument. That was our thing. We all had to be in band or orchestra.
I think that's good. I think that's a better thing to thrust upon a child.
No, I think it's equal, but I have to say that it's one of the best examples of parenting. I mean, have you ever sat through somebody learning how to play the violin? This is some real parenting. This is somebody willing to really stick it out. But here's the scoop. At 10 years old, her opting out, I want you to ask your sister this. When you're about 12 or 13 and you're at the skating pond, was it a pond or was it an inside rink?
Rink. Yeah.
You had a rink. We had a lagoon. And, I remember being 13 or 14 and skating so poorly, and the people who could skate backwards, it is the most flirtatious. It is the greatest way to flirt I've ever seen in my life.
Oh,
just to talk and to sort of weave back. And literally, I was like, I wish I could do that.
Oh, you're preaching to the choir. I mean, as a proficient, maybe incredible backwards skater.
Amazing.
In my grade school, like we would have an annual outing to the roller rink. And then.
Yep.
1 year I lobbied really hard to go ice skating, like in seventh grade. I was like, can we please go ice skating instead? And the idea gained enough steam that we did that. And it was like one of the few times where I dominated. And like, I was just out there. There was maybe one other kid. And as I say this, I'm like, oh, there's another kid who was pretty good. And if he heard this, he'd be like, wait a minute.
I was there.
Even though he's a middle-aged man now, he'd be like, no, wait a minute. But no, I can say with confidence as me and one other kid, Jim Maloney, who is from Minnesota.
I was hoping. Yeah, for that guy's name.
Yeah, so he He was really good. And
right, Minnesota.
And so
yeah,
I was out there skating around all sexy. Like the problem was that everyone out on that rink was already aware of my personality. So no amount of skill would have, you know, made me more attractive.
I have to say there was at least two or three girls who were like, oh my God, Dave Hill can skate backwards? What
yeah.
is happening? Yeah, it's a skill set that you didn't know you wanted when I was in junior high. I didn't know I wanted that. And I would see like Jim Moss, a good skater. Why did I care when I was 13 or 14? I also thought he was one of these. I had for a long time, I used to have crushes on guys who were silent until they said something very, very funny.
Oh, well, gosh, I would have been like your kryptonite then.
Right. When we had been 13, 14 together, probably yeah. just me just standing
Forget
next
it.
To you going, say something funny. Don't say anything. Don't
that
say anything.
Pretty,
and then say
was,
something funny.
That was me. I didn't
maybe
speak and then
maybe that's why. Maybe that's why we would be better friends if we were on the same coast.
Yeah.
But did you play
well, you'll
hockey
be coming
when you
out
were
this
kid?
Way?
Okay.
Yeah. I grew up, I started to my mind, I was unfathomably old. I was 11 when I started playing on like a proper team, like on a you know, on the ice.
Right.
So I'd played in the driveway and you know, street hockey and all that.
Right.
But I read up on like Wayne Gretzky started playing when he was 2.5 and I was reading when all these guys started playing and I was like, oh my God, there's no way I could possibly catch up.
Right. Aww.
And be, but I was really for, I would say like maybe 2 years at least. I was like,
yeah.
I'm gonna be a pro hockey player. And then when I was 13, I started playing guitar and then I was sort of, I still loved hockey and still played until my sophomore year in college on the team, you know,
okay.
the teams in my school and all that.
Yeah.
But once I started playing guitar, it was such a, I all of a sudden realized I'm like, oh, I, you know, cause when you're a kid, like you want to fit in. And you
right.
want, you know, so I was like, pretend I was like, when once I learned how to play Stairway to Heaven, I was like 13. I was like, oh, I never have to pretend to like something ever again.
Really?
Cause I used to be like, oh, you know, like growing up in Cleveland, you go to school on, you know, you better know the score of the Browns game and have some
okay.
vague understanding of what happened each quarter. And I never ever cared at all
right.
ever. I was always into the only sport I was into was hockey, and then other
right.
than that I was into music and art. Like I didn't care about
right
any
right.
anything that like the other kids were into. I only cared about the
you would think that as a girl that I would have gotten a pass at about the Green Bay Packers in Wisconsin. Not so
I was
yeah
yeah the Packers, forget it. That's
right.
I was just in Wisconsin on Friday. Maybe I think I told you that, but
well, we were in Chicago
yeah,
at the same
serious.
Time, and sadly, we did not.
I
get
know
to hang.
Two ships.
Right there,
you
we were.
Are,
we were three
right.
ships because Maria was with
yeah,
us.
Yeah, Maria was there. I would have loved. I wish I could have come to see you guys because I'm.
That's
such,
what she was like. You know how great would it have been if we would have got to see Dave's long set. And just, you know, just to see you do stand up for a long amount of time, you know, the 45.
Yeah. And I would have loved to see because I you guys are two of my favorite comedians and two of my favorite humans.
Right. It would have just been a delight.
And
too soon. Your turnaround was too quick. And
I
then
know.
You went to Wisconsin. Where were you in Wisconsin?
I was in Wisconsin the night before. I was in the most unlike I. Clinton, Wisconsin, which you may not have even heard of it.
I've never even seen the exit. What is that? Where is it?
It's near, it's like 20 minutes from Janesville.
Excellent. Janesville.
It's a town of 2,000 people.
Okay.
It's a one intersection town, all farmers.
Sure.
And on paper, it seems like the last place
yeah.
I should be performing.
Right.
But this country musician, Jeremy McComb.
Okay.
Great guy, great musician. He reached out to me out of the blue a year or so ago and was like, I'm doing these shows at this place, Boxcars.
Okay.
And would you want to come open? So I had no idea what I was getting myself into. Not obviously I wasn't like, you know, wasn't joining like a
cult.
No cult or anything, but I was like, I don't know what this is going to be, but I'll go and do it. And it was so fun. It was just, and it's literally farmers. So I was doing this show in Chicago, this one this past weekend. And so Tim, the guy who owns Boxcars, I said, could I do there on a Friday? And he said, yeah, we booked the show. I'm giving you way too much detail now. But
oh, that's okay. No, I'm interested because I'll go to Clinton. Sure.
It's great. You would do great. It is. So I say like, not that there's a place you wouldn't do great, but my point is you could see how some comedians would not go over well with a bunch of farmers.
Well, everybody's
in
every people would be worried about it for sure. And then,
yeah.
And then, and I used to say this back in the 90s, that everybody gets cable. Everybody will get my jokes. It'll be fine. Weirdly enough, everybody's so specific in their cable consumption right now that I would be a little more nervous.
But, yeah, it's, I mean, there's some things like, I have a long rambly story about being Bjork's driver once in the 90s that,
guys, to be fair, DaveHillOnline.com, please find out. He's going to be in Austin, Texas, by the way.
November 30th at 310 Austin there. You better come.
Everybody come. I'm in Austin November 9th, 10th, and 11th. You better come. Austin, Texas. Yeah. It's a great place to do comedy.
It's a can-do town, yeah. So, I forget. I was saying something. Anyway.
It was
really fun. And
it was about Bjork.
Bjork. I left out stuff like that. I didn't think that maybe a bunch of farmers in Wisconsin wanted to hear about. But it was really, I had a great time. I had a great time in Chicago, but weirdly, you know, on the plane home Sunday, I said, I'd have to say the Wisconsin show was more like they were just more.
Well, it's a little weirder.
Over the top.
And you had lower expectations. So the fact that it was fun at all kind of elevates the whole experience.
And there was a meat raffle, something called a meat raffle before my show in the same place.
Oh, of course there was. Do you know Mary Mack? Have you met Mary Mack? Wisconsin comedian?
You might. Oh, yes. I think I have.
Right. She does a meat raffle themed stand-up comedy show. Where she only raffles off like a can of Spam, but the theme is that she's like, people forget that all over Wisconsin they're having meat raffles, and she's right. I forgot about it.
I remember hearing about it the first time I was at this place, and this place is great, by the way. Like I would just go there and have some drinks, but they had that. I was like, oh yeah, the meat raffle, which is such a gift, like to. Just because you can just like, well, I have an extra 10 minutes in my set tonight just speculating on what a meat raffle is. And it's pretty amazing. And then, you know, I had so much fun and it was my second time there. But like the show was I think the Bjork thing was the only thing I was like, I'm not going to bother with that. But. You know, I've sort of had this realization sort of like recent months that I feel like I've been barking up the wrong tree my entire career to who I think are my fans. But I'm just like, it's been Wisconsin farmers this whole time.
Yeah. Well, there's definitely a niche there. Like Mary Mack tours Wisconsin constantly. Just doing small towns all over Wisconsin.
I had this thought, like, because they gave me a booklet that was all the meat raffles all over the place. And I'm like, I just want to do shows wherever there's a meat raffle. Then let me do the show after.
My friend, that is at least 35, 40 weeks a year. You're on the road. You're doing it.
Oh my God. Yeah. Just fly there
to Wisconsin, rent a, I would say an all terrain vehicle. Because you don't know when a meat raffle is going to happen. Could happen in the winter. And
And the fun thing was I found that, like, despite, you know, because Tim, my buddy, I'll say, because we're buddies now.
Right.
He has the place, and I sort of guessed what the politics, you know, because he said that, you know, they're kind of, he said, yeah, it's a pretty conservative crowd. This is after the show. We were just chatting.
Oh, right.
But the one thing I really liked is, so, you know, and I told him, I said, you know, I'm a big time libtard.
Right.
So, but
I'm a crystal clutcher myself.
Yeah. So I was just like, I'm glad we can still have so much fun together. Mm-hmm. And what I really liked is the universal thing, despite political differences, is you can shit all over Paul Ryan and everyone
agrees.
It.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, yeah, fuck that guy.
Yeah, yeah. Janesville, of course, is where Pete Lee grew up, and stand-up comic, and Andy Smith, stand-up comic. She grew up there. And the other thing I know about Janesville is that they have a dump that is so toxic that they have to, or not, is it toxic? Whatever it is, they have to drop these tubes into them, like metal toot rods, to release the methane gas. And it lights up at night. If I would have known you would have been near that dump, I would have said drive by that. It's beautiful in the moonlight, Dave.
I would have liked to have seen it. Sure. I have to say, I had so much fun. I don't want this whole episode to be about how much fun I had in Clinton, Wisconsin. But I always think, like, I was there, and my buddy Tim has his house. He has these guest rooms so the people doing the shows can stay at his house, which I like.
Oh, I've never enjoyed that. Yeah.
You never enjoy that?
No. I am Hampton Inn. Yeah.
No, the first time when I did the first show there, I was like, oh, I don't know about this. This seems like a bad idea. But then I got there and I was like, oh, this is delightful. He's got two big dogs. He's got lovely wife. It was a delight.
Sure.
And so I had a delightful time. But then he and his wife, the day after the show, I was going to Chicago later that day, they went in to do stuff at the bar, and then I go outside and they had a zip line, a trampoline.
What?
And like,
do they have kids?
No. No, they have like nieces and nephews. So
okay,
I think
They're the best aunt and uncle ever.
So I was like, I'm out and went into a cornfield, and then I'm on a zip line, I'm on a trampoline.
Did you do the zip?
Hell yeah. And they done, there's like a pile of leaves. I rode that. I mean, the thing, it was not, maybe not set up for a grown man, but I gave it my best shot anyway.
The first time I did a zip line was not set up for grownups at all. It was in a lavender field in France. Boom. Beat that. Follow that, motherfuckers.
It can't be done.
But it was for children, and it was not. And they had just picked all the lavender, so we came late. But there was a zip line. It sounds more beautiful than it was, but it was actually it was nice anyway.
A zip line into a lavender field in France is pretty much how I want to die.
Right. It holds some allure.
I have to say, like, I've only been to Paris a bunch of times.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to spread out, but I couldn't be, I love Paris like the way like a 13-year-old girl would love Paris.
Horses. Yes.
I'm just completely, so you tack on, I probably drink a lot more than a 13-year-old girl.
Depends on the,
You know, but I like some wine and a nice cheese plate, and then ziplining in a field of lavender.
I've only been to France one time because I'd always wanted to go, and it was never anywhere Andy wanted to go. So finally we went, and he had a great time. But we went to Lyon, and we spent like 4 days in Lyon, and then we rented a car and drove and looked at the caves. You know, there's cave paintings.
Sure.
And we went to some Roman ruins, and then we went to Paris. So we spent almost 2 weeks in France. And then I picked up a set in Paris, making the whole thing a business trip.
Did you, I would argue, and this, I'll probably get in trouble for this one day. All you had to do was interview Andy for a position as your assistant, just over one meal. And then the whole trip is a write-off, I think.
Well, here's the thing. It's not like we both didn't discuss stand-up comedy and video games the entire trip and game design. Because he also, that's a write-off. And we went, we went to several game stores doing some research. Total write-off. I got the set because Will Durst, sadly, fell ill. And he had a gig in Paris. And so I got a text from Emo Phillips saying, aren't you in Paris? Do you want to do his gig? And I said, I do want to do his gig, but this is sort of a second honeymoon. Let me check real quick.
That happened to me in Paris. Brooks Whalen had just been there.
Yeah.
And I was there having a romantic, my girlfriend
getaway.
And I were there for like a week or something. And it was supposed to be just all lovely times. And then Brooks told someone that I was there. And you can imagine the pandemonium when they find out that I'm walking their streets.
Just the streets of Paris. Dave Hill's there, you guys.
A guy reached out to me, an American guy, this guy Robert. And he ran this show. And he's like, do you want to come do the show? I'm like, all right, I'll do one show. And it was a fun show. And then we were there over like July 4th. He's like, I'm doing a July 4th show. It's at this hotel. Would you please come and do it? And I was like, no, you know, it's our last night in Paris. Like, I can't. We're just going to like do like romantic couple Paris-y's things. And then he kept asking me. He's like, it's going to be like 400 people. It's going to be amazing. So finally I'm like, okay, I'll come. I just want to do a set and then leave.
Yeah. And then go do romantic things.
So we go to this hotel and we walk in. It's Paris in the summer. They do not believe in air conditioning.
Right.
And we walk into this hotel lobby with like a ton, like 400 people.
Yeah.
And it's 100 degrees. And so my girlfriend, if it's below 60 or above 70, she shuts down. She has to be in that window. So I was like, okay, I'm going to take you to this cafe across the street and just park you there. I'm just going to go in and do this set and then I'll come again and then we'll continue.
Right. On.
And so I go back to the hotel and I'm like, so where is there like a venue, a theater in this hotel or something? And he's like, no, the show's right here in the lobby. And I was like, you're kidding. Like, there's people hanging out, having drinks. Like, no.
Wow. You've just agreed to do the Taste of Minnesota. Wow.
He literally handed me a microphone and he's like, go for it. While people are just spread out all over the place. And it was... I put it in the top five worst gigs I've ever done. Worst slash best. Because I genuinely, you know, when something's so bad, it starts to be the best again, you know?
Yes. Yes. There's that bad spot where.
And my girlfriend loves an awful gig. She'll.
That's your favorite?
She loves a great one.
Yeah.
And she loves an awful one. Like, I.
She's like a comic.
She I got asked to open for Snoop Dogg in Austin. Speaking of Austin, and
November 30th. Yes.
November 30th, 310 Austin. And so she was, as I said, I was like, this is going to be the worst gig ever.
Right.
Because no one coming to see Snoop Dogg wants to see me.
No.
But so she's like, I'm going to that. So she flew down to Austin and witnessed this excruciating.
I have to say that one of the worst gigs I ever did was at a pool hall in Walnut Creek, California. And I said to the guy before, and it would only paid $100. And I said, I'll give you $100 if I can just leave. And he said, clearly, what if I start it right now? And I ended up doing it, of course. It was completely insane. Mm-hmm. But it was fine. The fact you're doing stand up and all you hear is crack, someone calling their shots. The music is playing softly in the because there's like a little open area, but which has like a shitty bar that you could give up at. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like a little place for like 40 or 60 people to sit. And then there's a fake sort of railing. It's an actual railing, but it's just a railing. And then all it is sports bar. Right. It's pool tables and then giant screens showing various sports. The ones at the giving up bar were all muted, but the rest of them were on. And there was also a small amount of music playing underneath all of.
Oh, I hate that. And then in those scenarios, like if you say something about the music, they'll be like, well, we have to keep it on for. And there's literally one guy sitting at the bar. We have to keep it on for Ronnie because he's a customer.
We have to keep it on for, and then they walk away.
Yeah, and then the host is like,
tell you what.
It's going to be okay. Here, did I give you a ticket for spaghetti? There's spaghetti a mile down the road. If you go, you get a free plate of spaghetti. So we're cool, right?
I'll tell you, the draw of a free plate of spaghetti is weird. Acme Comedy Company in Minneapolis, Lewis Lee started probably 20 years ago. He calls it Insider Night, but I always called it Spaghetti Night. Because for $10, you would get spaghetti and a beer or a glass of wine or a soda and the show for $10.
The audience member does?
Yeah.
If you were an insider.
If you were an insider for $10, you could come and see a show on a Wednesday.
Amazing.
And get a plate of spaghetti, a beer, a wine, or a soda. And then you'd go into the club and spend $100 on beers. Is how he's a genius, Lewis Lee.
It's a solid business model.
Solid.
I mean, yeah. It's almost, not to bring it back to Meat Raffle, but the Meat Raffle, the thing about it is you end up spending way more than if you were to just go to the grocery store.
And buy meat.
Yeah, I like that. You could be like, well, I could just go to the grocery store and buy some bacon and a chicken breast and make my own bacon wrapped chicken breast, or I could buy, and that would cost me less than $20, or I could spend $100 on Meat Raffle tickets and maybe, or maybe
babysitter,
not win that.
Babysitter.
Oh,
come out for the Meat Raffle. Get a couple of beers. Okay. We're 35 minutes in. We have talked about hockey for approximately a minute and a half.
I'm just curious.
Oh, my friend, it is not you. It is me. I have weeded you off. You deserve another episode. This one took a long time because I kept failing to remember where I was in the world when we were going to do this.
We're both
welcome
rambling
to the Dork
types.
Forest, you guys.
Yeah.
Dave Hill is a delight. It's Mr. Dave Hill on all the socials. DaveHillOnline.com. The awesome game is about hockey.
Yes.
Anyway, he's going to be in Austin on November 30th. I'm going to be in Austin on January 9th, 10th, and 11th. And you should come to all of those shows if you live in Austin. Go to DaveHillOnline.com for tickets or JackieCation.com for tickets. Okay.
Absolutely.
Now, do you have a favorite hockey team right now?
Yeah, I mean, this is a bit of a cop-out because I'm more a lover of the game, as they say. So living in New York, I root for the Rangers.
Okay.
The New York Rangers. But the fact
Rangers?
That you didn't...
Yeah.
Yeah, the fact that you were unsure... I mean, I think most New Yorkers are unsure because it's such like... Someone said this to me recently. They said, the Rangers game, I'll sell out, but... Everyone who likes the Rangers is there. There's 18,000 and that's it. In the tri-state area, there's 18,000 Rangers fans.
Okay.
And
they come. They go to every game.
Yeah, but like if I go into a neighborhood, the few neighborhood bars I would go into and ask them to put on the Rangers game, I might as well be asking them to, you know, I could be saying like, hey, there's a pool match on.
Right. Could you put Young and the Restless on?
Yeah. 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 They're just completely like, okay, I don't know what channel that would be on, but okay.
Do this for me. Tell me who plays. How many people are on? Let's start real basic. How many people are on the ice? How many on a team?
I'm glad you asked.
Thank
goodness. There's three forwards, left wing, center, right wing, two defensemen, left and right, and then a goalie. So five skaters, one goalie each team.
Oh, so just six people on each team.
Just six people, but now...
Granted, they're wearing the biggest uniforms, so they take up a lot of space. They're like
bears.
Yeah,
they have a lot of pads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there offsides? This has been something
I'm glad
I wondered
asked.
About.
Yeah, that's like the hardest. Icing and offsides are the two things that people don't seem to understand in hockey. Like I've tried to explain it over and over to my girlfriend and she gets really frustrated saying that I'm not explaining it.
But
well, and maybe I'm not. But
well, let's find out. Give it a shot.
I mean, basically a skater can't cross into the offensive zone before the puck. So like if I have the puck and we cross the blue line into our offensive zone. And in this, we both play hockey very well for the same team.
Okay.
And you skate into the offensive zone and I come in and even a millisecond later, with the puck, you're offsides and the whistle blows and
we're gonna
have to do a face off in the neutral zone. But
that actually makes sense. Like the puck has to go into sort of a scoring distance before any of the skaters from the team that will try to score in that area.
Yeah, because otherwise you could just skate in and hang out and I could pass it to you from way far away.
Right. That which is done in other like that's done in Australian rules football. That's done in you could stand right next to the touchdown area in American football, and then someone would pass you the ball, and then you would run in.
Yeah, that's why football is not a real sport.
Right, because everybody has to have it together in hockey, and they the puck is the most important thing on the skate, on the ring, on the field.
That's
would you
exactly
say
exactly right? Yes.
Okay. So here's my next question. What is icing?
Icing would be like, it's changed. The rules changed over time, but it's basically sending the puck past the goal line from the other defensive zone into the offensive zone.
Is that like a giant, like a 3-point in basketball where you just throw it as from one side of the field to the other?
Yeah, basically. But if you were to do it and score, it would be allowed.
Oh, would it?
It would be allowed. Yeah. But
interesting.
If you did it and it just went like behind the net or whatever, then you've got an icing situation on your hands, but it's the rules.
And
changed.
How is that resolved?
Then they whistle, blow, and they bring it back down to the other defensive zone.
Okay.
From
the rules
from whence it came.
Okay. And the rules, how initially it was just don't do it?
No, the rules have kind of changed there's been like the two line icing rule, and like I don't even know where it's at now in some leagues, but that's the gist of it, what I've given you.
I love a gist. Okay.
That's the gist of it.
What is how many lines are there? So like how many zones?
I'm glad you asked. There's center ice, that would be the red line. That's sort of in the middle.
Halfway.
Yeah, and then there's two blue lines that are making up in between the blue lines is the neutral zone.
Okay.
And then beyond that is either your offensive or defensive zone.
Okay. And that the offense or defensive zones, those are essentially, do the blue lines cut your half of the field in half?
Well, no, it would be about, the blue lines would be about, probably about 40%.
Oh, interesting.
And then there's about 20% in between, roughly. But, and then there's two circles in each defensive or offensive zone for faceoffs.
Okay.
And then there's eight faceoff. No,
spaces.
Seven. Center ice, and then two other.
Okay.
Then four. There's basically nine places to have a face-off on the ice.
Because there's trouble, and they're like, got to have a face-off. And they don't bring it back to the center like in basketball, and then they do a jump thing.
No.
They do a face-off as close to possible.
Yeah. Yep. That's exactly right.
Okay. Now, favorite, can you think offhand of a favorite play that you've seen?
Favorite play that I've seen.
Like, have you seen somebody do something amazing or?
Well, pretty much everything Wayne Gretzky ever did was amazing. Like, you couldn't believe
he owns land here in Los Angeles. Was that one of the things that was amazing? I bet you it is, actually. It's sort of like.
I mean, maybe. I'm not a big fan of his off-ice life.
Okay. All right.
I believe him to be on the wrong side of history.
Oh, that'll happen. Once you get a giant bag of money, sometimes history, you get a different opinion about it.
Yeah, I mean, like, I haven't really followed what he's had to say about that many things, but just I think he keeps the wrong company for my tastes. Kid Rock performed at his daughter's wedding, and I feel like that enough.
Yeah, that's a sign.
There's probably a lot of other things not good.
That guy's not even a good musician. So
no, he's kind of a genius, though, I will say.
Oh, really?
I saw Kid Rock. One summer, I was weirdly asked to host these tents at all these music. I probably did like three, four, five music festivals. And I was in these tents, just kind of bantering. And at one of them, The Cure was playing and Kid Rock was playing. So it was pretty... It was called the Wide Net Festival. No, it wasn't, but it should have been because it was like just
they cast a wide net.
Yeah, it was just like this is just various entertainers in a field,
right? So Sade, waiting in the wings.
No, it was just like it was just like kind of something for everyone festival.
Okay,
and so Kid Rock was performing. My first band opened for Kid Rock.
Okay.
So my connection with Kid Rock goes way back.
When he was a kid, maybe.
He wasn't a kid when, I mean, he would have been in his 20s. We were all in our 20s when this happened. But when I saw him perform at this festival, which is probably like 8, 9, 10 years ago, I watched it and I was like, oh, this guy's kind of a genius because he's mixing like all these just kind of mass, like classic rock, country, and hip hop. Like basically the three most popular forms of music on earth.
Right.
I think maybe. And
at
just
this time,
kind of,
probably.
Yeah. At the time. So I was like Bob Seger, country, and hip hop. And he's just taking everyone's money.
But then singing about not letting anyone come into the country, Was he? What
well,
was he?
It was. He hadn't started that yet.
Okay.
He hadn't started that yet. Part of
I don't
me,
think he's rich enough to be that conservative. Anyway.
No, I sometimes think that he's completely playing a character. I don't. Mm. He's probably not. But sometimes I think he's just like, what is the lowest common denominator in every possible way? And that's what I'm going to do. Because it is basically, if you look at his career and his politics and everything, it's just like, what are dipshits into? I'll do that.
Well, I have to say, everyone who says that claims that they're doing a character when they say something horrifying, I'm like, well, you've successfully portrayed that character so well that I believe that that person is inside of you and nobody wants to hang out with that person.
So. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what usually happens. Like, you know, without, I don't want to name names, but yeah, there's plenty of people who are like, and especially in, you know, comedy or comedy adjacent things, people will be like, oh, I'm joking. But then
yes.
Eventually it's like, oh no, you actually do hold horrible
right.
beliefs.
You know, you can tell me that you're joking as a woman who's done comedy for 700 years. I have met any number of just disgusting gentlemen, who have said something horrifying and they're like, well, I was just kidding. And you're
yeah,
but I literally felt unclean and in some cases unsafe. So guess what? Pause before the hilarity. If you could do that, that'd be great.
Yeah, exactly. And what you've just described is why I rarely spend any time in green rooms. I just kind of like,
yeah.
I'm like, oh, are there a bunch of people hanging out? I'll not go there.
Yes.
That's pretty much, I've lived my life that way. I'm like, where are there not people? There, that's where you'll find me.
Do hockey helmets have any sort of radio situation? Are they talking to any of the coaches?
Oh, in the helmets?
Yeah, because you only have five people you're with. You could be very much alone on the ice.
Yeah.
The ice is a solo space.
I don't think that they do that. Like, I don't think it's like football where the coach is in someone's ear. I think maybe so once in a while you'll see on TV, they'll mic up a player and be like, we're going to get his perspective on the game. And then, you know, they usually have to shut that microphone off pretty quickly.
And then they regret that almost instantaneously.
Yeah.
What?
But okay. I've seen that. They do that. And it's just the guy like, hey, Johnny, over here, Johnny, Jeff.
I'm open.
Yeah.
What did Wayne Gretzky do? Like what were his great moves that everybody likes?
Well, I hope this truck and saw sound outside my window. I live in New York City.
Yeah, you do.
I don't know how someone has managed to fire up a chainsaw, despite the fact that I live in New York City, arguably the least chainsaw-y place on earth. But
comparable would be last week's episode with David Huntsberger, who
I love Dave.
Talked about woodworking and taking a chainsaw to some found lumber on the street. That might be David Huntsberger outside of your window is what I'm saying.
I love that. I'm a big fan of David. I'm a big fan of found lumber.
He made a workbench. And we didn't get to talk about sanding at all. Much like this episode where we're not really talking about a lot of hockey, but we're getting some nuggets.
We're getting tidbits. But, I mean, to be fair, to tie in the book, The Awesome Game, my new book, similarly, it digresses and goes far away from hockey many points in the book. But to answer your question about Wayne Gretzky, he was, compared to the average player, he was slight of frame.
Oh, not a big guy? Not as big as other players?
No, I mean, still, as humans go, he was a pretty big guy, like 6 feet.
Okay.
You know, big enough guy, but in terms of hockey player, not a very big guy.
Fair enough.
And he wasn't the fastest guy.
Oh.
He was not particularly fast. Like, you'd see him and you'd be like, how is he going that slow and completely mesmerizing? Just
dominating.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. And
like
they
bigger
often,
and faster guys.
It was often said that he slowed down the game to make everyone slow down, and then he would be boop and he'd go really fast. But still not that fast. But he would you can go on YouTube and see like him do stuff that you
Is it you're stick like, work or
it's skate yeah, work. Stick work and skating and just like going around people and like he'd bring the puck behind the net. They would call it his office. It was his office.
Okay.
And he would be back there and just setting up plays and sometimes just like going around the net and scoring. He even like did goals where he like kind of lobbed the puck over the net, hit the goalie in the back, and then it bounced in. He just made fools of people. Like he
right.
was, and
that's amazing.
You can go on YouTube and watch it. And the goals, I did this recently. I went on and just like watched like a highlights thing of all his he had so many amazing goals. You couldn't possibly do one highlight reel of them, but
right.
he was, it's just astounding. And you think like, how did people fall for that? Like, it's not like he's going like now you get players like, you know, Connor McDavid and the Oilers, Nathan MacKinnon for the Avalanche. And they're moving so fast and it's so crazy. You're just like, how are they moving so fast and doing all this? But Gretzky's almost more impressive because he's not really moving that fast, but he's doing insane. Because you would think you would have to move that fast to get away with such trickery, but he was just kind of cruising along at a speed that you would think, well, my mother could do that.
Do they play to like 10 or is there a time limit?
Like 10
points?
At night?
Like, or, I no,
oh,
like 10.
Oh.
I don't think. Is it like horse? What are we talking about? Probably.
No,
not.
There's 20 minute periods.
Okay.
And then they used to do ties in the regular season, but now they do overtime.
Okay.
So there's not ties.
Okay. And is it 1 point per goal?
That's right.
And what are like, can they be like 7-5? I mean, do people score a lot?
7-5 would be a high score for hockey. Like a 7-5 game, I would be like, oh, that game seems stupid. Like what? Like
what?
How did that?
Who was defending anything? Kind of. Does it feel? Is it usually
like
soccer?
You know, you want more like a game would be like 2-3 or something. You know.
Okay.
It's sort of like soccer.
And here in the last 4 minutes of this of our
oh
hour,
my goodness.
Yeah, yeah. We have
and it has flown by.
I told you it would. And it was and it's been amazing. It's so fun. So what about the fighting? People always want to know about the fighting.
I'm against it. I think it's stupid because it's, you know, in the NHL, the idea is like, oh, you got to let the players blow off steam. And that's why we allow fighting to some extent. You know, they don't let it just go run wild. But
right.
It's such a stupid logic. And I think it's hurt the sport because, you know, it's a turn off to some. It's turned, you know, some people are into it. But I think
it seems to be like the most people are like, oh, it's a real, it gets real like violent where two skaters will like just push each other along a lot with their pads.
Yeah, I mean, it's stupid, I think, to be like, oh, you got to let them,
well,
you know, because it's
what,
just like if you were going to say
it,
that.
Are they just mad? Or?
Well, it's a violent sport. It's there's a lot of ways to be dirty in the sport. And
oh, with
like,
the sticks?
Yeah, you have sticks, you have skates, you have, you know, your elbows, you have all this stuff that you like. And you're slamming into boards and there's a lot of ways to, you know, be mean out there and upset people, hurt some feelings.
Okay. And so then that's the retaliation. They're just like, yeah, but you just jammed your stick up my butt or whatever. I'm going to hit you with my forearm or we're going to wrestle. Okay.
And it's stupid. And you know, the idea that like, oh, we have to let them let some steam off that. Then it, when you say that, it's like, well, there should be fighting in line at CVS using that logic.
Right.
Like you should be able to take a swing at someone in any situation where you're frustrated.
Is there less domestic abuse because of this rule? That's what I'd like to know amongst the hockey players of the world.
That's a good question.
Nobody's done that poll. Where's that poll?
No. And I'll say though, given you my stance on it, league that I play, like men's league that I did play in a league. My general rule, I played in a couple of men's leagues, like old men's, you know, recreational leagues. But as you know, I've said this before, not to you, but in life, I don't believe there's any such thing as recreational sports because there's always at least one person taking it way too seriously and ruining it for the others. So in playing these men's leagues, my general rule was if someone did something to me that had nothing to do with playing the game of hockey, like, you know, I've had guys hit me in the neck with their stick when neither one of us are anywhere near the puck.
Right.
And in that scenario, I will beat them up. And I am a man of peace. But if someone does something to me that's like, oh, you're just being mean or violent. And my rule was, if you do something to me that would potentially make my day tomorrow harder because you've hurt me.
Right.
And it's you've done it on purpose and not in the interest of your team scoring a goal.
Right.
Then I'll beat you up.
Right.
And
because we're just fighting now. That's an excellent
You started it, mister.
You just started a fight with me. And
so
took a weird like pot shot without any provocation. So
absolutely.
This is an interesting, I like this peacenik attitude because it feels like another side of Dave Hill that I didn't know about, but it also feels like a sane response. Where you're not accepting bullying, but you're not initiating any sort of violence yourself at all.
No, if someone starts it, I'll finish it. But
two sounds, you guys. Dave hitting you hitting the ground. That's it.
Exactly right. Though, and my mom, she would go. She got me in my first men's league, like in my 20s. She's like, oh, she would go to like skating sessions with the organ music. And she met this guy who ran the men's league in the next town over. So she's like, oh, he said you could join this team. So she got me in the league and I was in this league. And I had to come up with this rule for myself where I would beat up anyone who messed with me. And sure enough, some guy who would have been like at the time, it's probably like 45, but he was, you know, 20 years older than me at the time.
Right.
And he was messing with me. So I beat him up and I got kicked out. I was suspended.
Oh,
and it was the end of the season. So I essentially was suspended for the rest of the season.
Right.
And sometime later, my mom was skating with this guy, Paul, who had gotten me into the league. And so I ran into Paul down at the rink. And I'm like, oh, how's he doing? And she said, oh, he's good. He says you got into some trouble at your game. And I was like, oh, no, now I in turn will be in trouble at home.
With your mother. Yes.
Yeah, because I was still living there. And I said, oh, what did he say? And said, oh, said that you, beat someone up. And, I say beat up cause you know, men's league violence is pretty symbolic cause you're all wearing pads and
it's
stuff.
It's gotta be, that makes sense too, is everybody's all padded and helmeted up. Okay.
Yeah, you're not really like dropping the gloves and really beating the crap out of each other right. The way they do in the NHL. So it's more just you're hurting feelings. And so I beat this guy up, and so she said, "Oh, you beat this guy up," and I was like, "Oh, are you disappointed in me?" And she said, "No, like I've known you your whole life, and you've always been so peaceful. So I figure if you beat someone up, they must have done something to deserve it." And so I said, "Yeah, that's what happened." So she said, "Yeah, I'm not mad. Sounds like he had it coming."
You know, that is both a mother's voice, and yet when I've known you off and on low these 20 odd years.
Yeah.
I agree. I agree with your mother in that case, because some people, their mom would just defend them in any case. But I think in your mom's case, this comes from an educated space, a space of, of validity. Dave Hill, it's been an hour. Let's get you back to talk about the game of hockey.
I know. We touched on it a little bit, but
at least 9 minutes, at least nine of these minutes.
There's nine action. I mean,
quality,
the ratio, my book
info.
Is, yeah, my book is similar in that I think hockey lovers will love it, but they'll also be like, wow, there's not as much hockey in here as I thought.
My brother, Phil, had that opinion about a river runs through it and fly fishing. There wasn't enough fly fishing in it. But that was fiction. I've waited off again.
Can I tell you?
Yes.
There's literally, I don't need to turn. I mean, I should turn. There's a guy 10 feet outside I'm on the third floor of my building.
Right.
There's a guy in one of those cherry picker construction things looking at me through my, as I'm talking to you, because I'm like wondering who's using a chainsaw.
Is it easy to give that guy a cameo? Do you want to turn that? Or would it be too great a project?
He's ducked down a little bit, but I don't know if you can see him.
Oh, yeah. I can see that guy.
But moments ago, he was looking at me and smiling.
In the window.
Yeah. And God forbid, I mean, I'm a gentleman, so there it does not exist a scenario where
I saw your suit coats as you swooped. Yeah, you're a gentleman.
Yes,
yeah.
I would not. There's no scenario where I would have had the windows open and had been masturbating wildly. But
That guy would have got a total eyeful.
In his line of work, if he's doing this to other people, he must be getting a show from time to time.
I believe it. Speaking of a show, we did one. Look, we did a show. Rangers of the Dork Forest. Know that I'm talking to Dave Hill. It's DaveHillOnline.com, Mr. Dave Hill, on all the socials. And The Awesome Game is his new book. He has a couple other books, too. Go see him in Austin on November 30th. Go see me in Austin on November 9th, 10th, and 11th with Lori Kilmartin. We're doing a live Jackie and Laurie and then some stand-up comedies. So thank you so much for doing the show, Dave.
Thank you for having me. I had a delightful time.
Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
Hi, Adal. How was the show?
I married a silly man in a flamingo hat. I just did an episode of The Dork Forest.
Not only a flamingo hat, but a flight suit.
Because you are a flight. Do flamingos fly?
Yes, of course they fly.
Well, why would I know that?
Right? Right.
Where's that? Right? Right? Hey, you guys, this is a bonus. This is the bonus part where I talked to Andy Ashcraft about the episode.
Hey.
I just had a delightful hour with Dave Hill, Mr. Dave Hill, who has a new album, a new book out about hockey. And he wanted to talk about hockey. And we talked about hockey for 9 minutes.
9 whole minutes?
Out of 51 minutes of not talking about hockey.
And then what did you talk about?
Well, we talked about a lot of things. We talked about it. He once buried an iguana.
So have I.
That's what I said. And I showed him. I showed him.
That's
the,
sad.
It wasn't even his iguana, but he said you had to bury him deep.
What? Why? They climb out? It's Halloween.
You're in the Halloween mode. We're recording
Zombie Iguana.
It was because of you needed to make sure that no animals got to the animal.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean,
that's true with all animals.
That's true. Yeah, that's not specific to iguanas.
Iguanas are delicious once they've passed away.
They are delicious.
I guess.
Well.
But you usually, because you've buried several animals.
I have. Many animals.
Andy Ashcraft.
Burial of animals.
He's better than a taxidermist, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we thought about it.
No, we didn't.
with a little motor and a little thing to move his jaw so he can sing,
absolutely,
"Don't Worry, Be Happy."
Absolutely not. We never thought of that at all.
Maybe I just thought of it right now. So what else did you talk about?
Well, we talked about ice skating. I told him that there's nothing more flirty than someone who can ice skate backwards.
True.
And he said it was his golden moment when he was about 12 years old that he could ice skate backwards, but everyone knew him off the ice. So it was hard to be flirty. And I said, I bet you it worked. I bet you it worked. There was a girl who wanted in. And we talked about stand-up comedy and him performing around a meat raffle in Wisconsin. You know, Mary Mack does meat raffle themed shows.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they're based on the fact that in every small town in Wisconsin, or many of them, and probably not just Wisconsin,
there are meat raffles?
There's meat raffles. And it's just a way to gather with people, have a couple of beers, spend $100 on something. You can go to the grocery store and just buy some meat. But it's a meat raffle. It's real.
And it's for charity.
Possibly. Sometimes. I think so.
Maybe it's just for fun.
Well, it might be at the VFW. So that would be the charity.
Okay.
Or it might be at the Rotary Club.
Okay.
We did speak briefly of
I've never lived
hockey.
Anywhere where there was a meat raffle.
Right. It's weird because you lived in rural, rural California. So.
And Arkansas and Mississippi.
Right. You've been all over.
Where people hunt.
Hunt
yeah.
and have meat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And talk about meat.
A lot.
Like it's not just beef.
Right. They talk about meat in the wider sense.
Right.
Yeah, you're not wrong. Anyway, but it was... In spite of the fact that we have 9 minutes of hockey talk.
Hockey
talk. Amazing.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's great. It sounds like a fun, wide-ranging episode of just two friends chatting.
Yes. He's a bit of a diamond. But anyway, Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?